Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety. So happy you've taken a bit of time out of your day to join me. And this is a big time of year around here. It's our radio anniversary, or radioversary, as I call it. Yep, 4 years ago was our first debut of Speak Up and Stay Alive. And now, about 210 shows later, we still have so much to talk about. Who would have thought? I don't think I ever shared with you how this show got started. Well, by now, you know, back in 2008, my mom fell at work, crushed her shoulder beyond repair, so it had to be replaced. A total reverse shoulder replacement. Did it actually have to be replaced in such a dramatic fashion? Today, I would say no, because I'm so much wiser than I was back then. But using the limited knowledge and tools we had at the time, and believing every word a random doctor spoke, we did as we were told. During the shoulder surgery, and most likely beforehand, Mom was having a heart attack that went undiagnosed by the entire post-op team for nearly 9 hours. This missed diagnosis led to 4 months in intensive care, rehab, intensive care, rehab, and round and round. By some miracle, she managed to survive, and about 2 years after that, I felt the need to get all of the bad memories out of me and onto paper. Kind of a cathartic situation, I would say. And thus, the book was born, Speak Up and Stay Alive, the Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide. The book came out in January of 2012 while Bob and I were still in Arizona. Now, we used to stay in Arizona for 6 months and back in Ohio for the remaining 6 months. And from the day the books were delivered until we came back to Ohio in May, I had 40 speaking events, and I quickly figured out that people wanted to learn more about patient safety. In February of that year, I had a rather large event that I wanted to promote, so I visited with a local radio station gal who had been trying to get me to advertise. And I thought, what the heck? Let's give it a try. So I headed to the station with my little 30-second ad all written out. They brought me into the studio, gave me the mic and the headset, and said, go. So I began. Did you know that hospital-acquired infections is the third leading cause of death in the United States? Find out more next Thursday at the... And that's as far as I got. The station manager came bounding in. Stop, she said. You can't say that on the air. I can't say what, I asked. You can't say that hospital infections cause death. Why not? It's the truth, and I can show the many studies and research that corroborate this fact. Oh no, she said, I believe what you're saying is true. It's just, we have a hospital that advertises with us, and they may not like this. Okay. And so I began to understand more of the political mumbo that goes along with just about everything in life. So, I tipped my hat, thanked everyone for the opportunity, and walked out. I was not about to succumb to this foolishness, and I went home, really irritated, and I sat on this for a while. A few days later, it hit me. So, I can't do a 30-second ad that tells the truth? How about if I do my own show? And with that, I gave a call to the folks at Salem Media Group in Cleveland, Ohio, and requested an appointment to run the idea by them. Now, mind you, I never had radio experience other than turning one on. But Bob and I flew home in the middle of a freezing winter day and met with the station manager and a few others. They loved the idea, and we set a start date for June 2012. And so, from some sheer determination that someone was not going to censor what I had to say and what you need to hear, we are celebrating 4 years. And I have to thank you, my very loyal and savvy listeners, for tuning in, for caring as much as I do about improving the healthcare system, and for your desire to stay safe during every healthcare or hospital experience. And just by the way, to show you how utterly wrong this poor Arizona radio station manager was. I've been invited to speak on many occasions to hospitals, to healthcare associations, nursing homes, rehabilitation facilities, because they too know that the healthcare system is fragmented and that they need help to improve the patient experience. And I guess if there is a lesson to be learned here, as there typically is in all seemingly wrong, bad, or irritating situations, is that a negative response from someone is not the final answer, but rather could be the impetus to something really important. We just need to recognize that, to be steadfast in our ideas and goals, and not let anyone stop us, you, me, from what you believe is a good idea or a purpose. I've never been one to really take outside or unsolicited direction very well. Tell me I can't do something and I'll prove that I can. So today, on our fourth radioversary, I extend a big thank you to the station manager in Arizona who said I couldn't, to the station manager in Cleveland who said I could, and to you for finding what I share with you to be of value. So now you know the story with a good happy ending. Well, now, with that out of the way, we had better head into today's show, because it is way past time for the Hospital Hazard of the Week. Since our guests are here to talk about apology and disclosure, it makes me think back to my mom's story and how no one during our entire 4-month hospital stay bellied up to the bar and did the right thing. But ha, what they didn't know was that I knew exactly what had gone wrong and who was responsible. And I knew this on day 2. My mom was in the hospital for shoulder surgery after she fell at work and crushed it to the point of replacement versus repair. While in the recovery room, she suffered a heart attack. And from what I now know, she was showing signs of this prior to the surgery, yet no one took her complaints seriously. While in the recovery room, she consistently complained of not feeling well, pointed to her chest, and waited for help. Meantime, the staff ran 4 different EKGs. Finally, someone determined that she was in trouble and summoned a cardiologist who eventually got her to the cath lab to intervene. Well, long story short, she was in the hospital for 4 months, staving off infections, C. diff, medication errors, overdoses, lack of therapy, serious psychotropic drug reactions, and on and on and on. Well, as I mentioned earlier, on day 2 of this nightmare, a doctor, whom I did not know, found me in the hospital hallway, took my arm, and pulled me into a tiny conference room just outside the intensive care unit. And as he handed me a manila envelope, his precise words were, "This stinks, and you need to do something about it." Wow. With great trepidation, I opened the envelope to find 4 EKG rhythm strips with my mom's name at the top, as well as the date and time. That being the morning right after the shoulder surgery while in the recovery room. As I studied the squiggly lines, thinking, "I have no idea what this means," my eyes went to the top of the page where in plain English I read, "Acute anterolateral myocardial infarction present," highlighted by asterisks. Basically, it means heart attack in progress. Well, the mystery doctor, who thankfully understood the power of disclosure, even though it was a backdoor effort, he and I had a few more meetings during the next week that left me fully informed as to what happened. So began the next 4 months, an interesting game of sorts, a weird hide-and-seek peekaboo of me watching people's eyes and body language, asking pointed questions, noticing how certain doctors who were no longer part of the care team would sneak and peek into my mom's room during times when they wouldn't expect me to be there. They would sometimes hang around in the halls during rounds, checking on her prognosis and shaking in their scrubs, I'm sure, to hope that she survived and that no one would be the wiser as to what happened to cause the missed diagnosis. Yet all the while, I was watching them. Kind of like wearing sunglasses, but not. I knew, but they didn't know that I knew. Secret huddles, whispers, glances, diverted eyes. It was a scary, yet sadly humorous view with the ugly backdrop of just plain wrong. And all through it, no one, not even the kindest of the doctors or nurses, no one ever spoke the words to me. No one said, "Here's what happened." No one offered an explanation, let alone an apology. They thought I was in the dark, so let's leave it alone. Was I angry? Yes and no. I was too concerned about my mom's condition and knew that I had to be on site 24/7 to make sure that nothing else untoward would occur, to waste what little energy I had left to be angry. But how human would it have been for someone to have approached us and explained the error and perhaps offered to pave the next 4 months with some help? Just some little things like, "Here's a parking pass for you to use. Oh, I see you're here from dusk till dawn. Here's a cafeteria voucher for you. Go get a tuna sandwich on us." But no. Instead, everyone scurried and hurried around, hoping that Mom would survive and that we'd get the heck out of there before somehow we figured things out. Well, way too late for that. As much as I honor most of them for doing a Herculean job of saving my mom's life, I really don't respect them. How smart for everyone if there was a system to encourage and allow physicians to reveal any errors without blame and shame, to create a process for a quick investigation to help avoid similar incidents from recurring, if there was a system to provide apologies for avoidable injuries and to offer timely and fair compensation when appropriate without having to resort to litigation. It's sickening that disclosure and apology in medicine has to be viewed as some novel pilot study. Come on, people. It's simple. It's the right thing to do.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
After a hospital stay or other health issue, rehabilitation and therapy, physical, occupational, or speech therapy are imperative if you want to regain your strength and previous abilities. When it's haphazard or non-existent, you lose. And that's why your rehabilitation care choice is crucial. Let's spend the next 2 minutes with Lauren Teschner from the Welsh Home in Rocky River to gain a better understanding. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Why, tell us why, is daily therapy so important? And what does the Welsh Home do to accommodate maximum recovery?
The majority of the people, when they come for a short-term rehabilitation stay, on day one when we set the goals, their main goal is to, one, go home. And the way that we accomplish that is by the therapy department. The therapy department was once explained to me by a resident who had a complete success story and returned home as they use a gentle but firm touch. So even when she was too tired that day, they were gentle and sympathetic that, you know, she is going through a healing process, but firm in their approach that if you want to get home and you want to accomplish this goal, this is what we need to do. We have therapy at the Welsh Home 7 days a week. The reason we offer it 7 days a week is that we want to make sure that people are using the maximum of what their insurance benefit will allow for. Most of the time, the traditional insurances will say that people can receive 5 days a week of therapy. The reason we have it those 7 days a week is to accommodate people who come to us on the weekend or people who maybe they really need to take a day off of the therapy and restart it the next day so that they can continue to receive the maximum that their insurance benefit will allow for.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Lauren.
You're welcome.
The Welsh Home offers state-of-the-art skilled rehabilitation therapy on-site to meet your individual needs. Whether you're looking for short-term or long-term care, the Welsh Home can help. And you don't have to be Welsh to call the Welsh Home your home. Call them to arrange for a tour or simply to ask questions. 440-331-0420. 440-331-0420. Or visit welshhome.com.
In your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7. 24/7. You're listening to the hottest.
SpeakUpAndStayAlive.com. That's SpeakUpAndStayAlive.com.
You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. And if you know us, you know that we work diligently to bring you only the best of the best when it comes to our guests. And today, we are quite fortunate to have some groundbreakers with us, Dr. Alan Woodward and Dr. Kenneth Sands, to talk about their efforts within the state of Massachusetts to implement a disclosure, apology, and offer process to resolve medical liability issues and add to patient safety efforts, our main concern around here. Dr. Woodward is chairman of the Massachusetts Medical Society Committee on Professional Liability and a past president of the Medical Society. And Dr. Sands is senior vice president for healthcare quality at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Both are prime proponents of this new effort and one which holds promise. So we welcome both of you to the show today. Welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you
for having us.
Well, litigation, let's talk about that for a minute. It's the typical way for harmed patients to seek recognition of the problem and compensation. Yet there's so many barriers and obstacles that make this a very inefficient and burdensome route to go, financially, emotionally, plus as a patient, I imagine that there's quite a steep learning curve, you know, learning about tort reform and those kind of things, that there simply has to be a better way. So I hope that you can tell us what you're doing in the state of Massachusetts that helps ease this troublesome process.
Well, I'll start out. This is Dr. Woodward. We've been working for about 7 years to facilitate the adoption of disclosure, apology, and offer in Massachusetts because we think it provides a significantly better alternative and a better option for patients and for providers and for the healthcare system as a whole to deal with adverse outcomes of medical care.
So how did you get started?
Beginning about 2.5 years ago, we did what was called what led to a document called the Roadmap to Liability Reform. And what we were really trying to do was understand what had been done as a demonstration in some institutions nationally, University of Michigan being one particularly outstanding example of application of disclosure, apology, and offer. And what was the degree to which that model could be imported to other settings, specifically in Massachusetts. So we interviewed a set of stakeholders across the Commonwealth, and that included patient advocacy leaders, legislative leaders, bar association, both the defense bar and the plaintiff's bar, and malpractice insurers, and obviously hospitals and providers, to ask the question, were people ready to move to a disclosure, apology, offer type of model as opposed to the traditional liability model? And what we found was there was a large degree of interest in moving to that model from really all corners. There were some barriers identified, but the feeling was those barriers were surmountable. We have gotten started by using that information, putting it into a roadmap document which has been published, and now moving to actually doing demonstrations in certain hospitals, as well as creating a statewide resource for other institutions that might be interested in following a similar pathway.
Right. And I think most anyone you speak to would agree that the current liability system is counterproductive to patient safety, and it really doesn't serve anyone well, the patient, the provider, or the organization. So it seems like this makes a lot of common sense to move forward in that direction. Can you explain to us the process of disclosure, apology, and offer? How does that work?
Well, there are really four fundamental components, and we're calling this program in Massachusetts, we've expanded it to what we're calling the CARE program. But I'll start with disclosure, apology, and offer. The first basic premise is that you have a culture of safety at every healthcare enterprise, and you have an infrastructure capable of doing a comprehensive analysis of any adverse outcome and determining what went wrong and what can be done to prevent a recurrence and taking action to prevent such a recurrence. And then the disclosure part is to explain to the patient in detail what happened and what you found in the investigation and whether the adverse outcome was avoidable or was anticipated or recognized complication of a various procedure or intervention. In that disclosure process, if it has been determined that there was an avoidable injury to the patient, then there is an appropriate and sincere apology related to the patient, and if appropriate and warranted, an offer of compensation without the patient having to resort to litigation, as is currently most typically the course. we extended the definition and the nomenclature for our program in Massachusetts. We felt that communication, apology, and resolution more accurately reflected what we are trying to accomplish. We felt that disclosure implies sort of one-way communication, where we very much want the communication to be a two-way effort. We think apology is the critical component, and we know that in the vast majority of cases when litigation is pursued, that patients don't get an apology. And we know that apology is therapeutic both for the patient in moving forward in dealing with anger and is therapeutic for the provider in dealing with the grief and the negative feelings of having injured somebody. And the resolution component, we think, is broader than just offer. It's dealing with the patient's medical needs, it's dealing with their psychosocial needs, and it's compensating them financially to help defray any additional costs or impacts that the adverse outcome has had for the patient.
Oh, I like that a lot better. Communication, apology, and resolution.
The only thing I would add to what Alan has said is that resolution often for patients means knowing that an institution has done things to make sure that the harm event will not occur again in the future. That ends up being something very important to patients. And so part of the resolution might be understanding what has been done to make the system safer. And so it really does go beyond that word offer.
Just from most of the people I've spoken to, that's really what people want, is to know that what they've gone through perhaps will save somebody else from having to have that same experience. So I like the word resolution. I think that makes a lot of sense.
That information we also plan to disseminate across the state to other institutions. So the learning event is not just at the institution where the adversity occurred, but in a broader arena.
Sure, to truly have transparency, not just within the four walls, but to take it out and share it with others so that they can learn from that experience, right? I'm imagining, and I think somebody alluded to this before, that there have to be some barriers to the implementation of this. Are there? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, there's definitely some barriers, but they're surmountable barriers, and there are things that we are addressing with certain strategies. One is simply a level of discomfort with providers around disclosure and apology or communication and resolution. This isn't a skill that has typically been taught in medical school or residency, and in fact, a lot of physicians in the past were taught just the opposite, that when something goes wrong, you should try and communicate as little as possible and protect yourself by being retentive of information. So this is not necessarily the natural previous learning of providers. There's another issue that providers are concerned about, which has to do with whether some form of resolution, like compensation, will actually lead to some form of regulatory reporting. And there are reporting systems at both the state and federal level which are looking at how often a physician, for example, has had some payout in association with their care. And while those are always accompanied by the opportunity to explain the circumstances, physicians are naturally very anxious about any report that has to go out in relation to their care. So that is a source of a potential barrier. Something relatively specific to Massachusetts is something called the Charitable Immunity Law. And it turns out in Massachusetts, the laws are written where nonprofit organizations such as hospitals are protected from lawsuits above a certain level. That number right now is $100,000. So if a party is interested in suing for a figure above that, they are forced to turn to naming individuals. And there's some sense that it would be hard for hospitals to get behind a coordinated effort like communication and resolution if they are in fact protected. So each of these things have ways to counteract the barrier. The issues around physician discomfort with disclosure and apology is really a training and education agenda, and we have found that to be a very effective strategy. In terms of reporting requirements, there's work that we're finding can be done at both the state and federal level to give more clarity about the fact that not all financial settlements are reflective of the fact that a single individual did not provide the right care. And the charitable immunity law is, it's really an issue that it's not an issue, that hospitals are certainly motivated to do the right thing and to do whatever in the best interest of the patient and the long-term performance in terms of liability, that this does function in the best interest of the institution.
Mm-hmm. I guess we would imagine that there would be some level of discomfort because, as you mentioned, it goes against training. Hopefully, though, if this communication and apology and resolution becomes something that we could really hold on to, maybe the folks that are coming up and are now being trained will be trained with that in mind, and so perhaps it won't be such a difficult thing for them to accomplish.
I think that's true, and I think the important thing to realize is that clinicians do recognize that the ethical and professional thing to do is to be straightforward and transparent and completely disclosing to patients. So it feels natural for them to go in the direction of communication and resolution. And so there's no resistance there in terms of it appealing to the ethical and professional considerations of the clinician.
Right. I can understand that. I want to reach out to our listeners for a moment. If you're just finding us, you picked a good day to do so. We are Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio, your healthcare and hospital survival guide. And I'm your hostess, Pat Rulo. And today we have two innovators with us when it comes to hospital disclosure and apology, Dr. Alan Woodward and Dr. Kenneth Sands with the Massachusetts Alliance for Communication and Resolution Following Medical Injury. And we're talking about communication, apology, resolution. And you mentioned briefly about liability insurers. Let's just go there for a minute. Has there been any opposition from those insurers regarding this new effort?
We have the collaboration of the major malpractice insurers in the state of Massachusetts. I would say that they are very interested in evaluating in a evidence-based way the effectiveness of this program, and they are participating with suspended judgment. I think they would like to see this be successful, but they are it is a change for them, and they're watching the data carefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the University of Michigan, they've been watching that for a while, and I believe it's been shown to reduce the frequency of lawsuits. Is that correct?
That is correct. In fact, they've been able to reduce the number of cases going to litigation by about 90%. Stanford has had similar results. They have not been at it as long, and they're not quite as dramatic. But virtually all of the systems that have put this in place have shown a significant decrease, including the Reliant Group in Massachusetts, have shown after a lag of the cases which are currently in litigation, the number of new suits drops off significantly when you use this as an alternative in advance of litigation. Clearly, it's beneficial for all parties. The average time in Massachusetts to an award is 5.5 years. Many take much longer than that. And so that's a very slow process if you're looking at significant financial impact on families and not all of the needs being covered through medical insurance.
Right.
So it certainly is a better approach for patients and their families.
Well, it sounds like a win-win, beneficial for all sides. Here's a question. Does this model help to improve patient safety? Have you found a reduction in defensive medicine, such as the reduction perhaps in unnecessary testing and procedures?
Well, I think it definitely improves patient safety. The most immediate way that, for example, the University of Michigan saw this is that the reporting of adverse events increased dramatically. So what happens is as physicians and other clinicians become comfortable with a transparent system that will support them and resolve these issues outside the court system, they become more comfortable reporting when something happens that might be a patient safety issue. So reporting in the University of Michigan increased by about tenfold. And all that additional information about potential risks to patient safety means that you have a greater chance of getting out in front and putting system fixes in place before they become a risk to patient safety. Mm-hmm. The issue of defensive medicine, we think, is also very important and is likely to show improvement under this model. It's a little bit harder to measure in the short term how ordering practices have changed, although certainly the clinicians at the University of Michigan verbalize that they are less likely to order tests simply to avoid litigation because they have a level of comfort with the system.
I should mention, too, that at the University of Michigan, relative to the patient safety issue, the number of new incidents that rise to a significant level of patient injury have declined by about two-thirds. That's as a result of this loop closure and efforts to improve patient safety. So I really think the positive outcome for patients and their families, as well as the toll that the current system takes on providers being tied up in litigation for 5.5 years on average to the time of an award, is a very onerous process for providers too, as well as the constant comments that from counsel that you can only speak to me and can't speak to the patient and so on. I need to be very careful about what you say. Doesn't help providers deal with the guilt, and we call them the second victims. So we think it's clearly a better system for patients, clearly a better system for providers, and clearly better for patient safety improvement efforts and the healthcare system as a whole. We do believe that if we can take the fear out of the equation for providers, that the practice of defensive medicine will diminish over time. And that's to all of our benefit if the healthcare system, if we're able to weed out unnecessary costs in the healthcare system.
Oh, very well said. I agree with you. How can our listeners learn more about you and what you do?
You mentioned our organization earlier, which is the Massachusetts Alliance for Communication and Resolution Following Medical Injury. We have an acronym, which is MACRMI, M-A-C-R-M-I. And we have a website, which is www.macrame.info or www.macrame.net. And that will take you to our website, which has a lot more information about the program in communication and resolution in general. There's also information about the pilot projects that we are doing in Massachusetts and information about how to get started in this area if you are an interested provider organization.
So, gentlemen, do you have any final words of advice for us today?
Well, I think the message is clear that this is a better system for patients and providers and for healthcare and our healthcare system as a whole. So we would encourage your listeners to speak up in their local communities or at their state level or with their local healthcare organizations and encourage them to look at this alternative and consider implementing it. We actually have seen in several states now significant efforts to move in this direction. So it's expanding across the country, system by system and community by community, and in some cases, state by state. The Oregon governor just signed a bill similar to the one that was signed in Massachusetts to facilitate adoption of this approach. And there have been several grants in other states to encourage this approach. So we do think it's picking up momentum, but the more people are aware of it and they speak up and suggest that this is a better approach, the more rapidly it will be implemented.
Well, I encourage all of our listeners to go to that website. It's www.macrmi.net. Both of you, I appreciate your taking the time out to share this exciting news with us today. And please feel free to keep us updated with new results if you want to share them with us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Well, thank you. It's our pleasure. Does your doctor shake your hand when he or she enters your exam or hospital room? Ooh, where has that hand been? Did you know that healthcare-acquired infections are one of the leading causes of death? Well, now you do. And you'll learn more when you join me, Pat Rulo, and listen to Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio every Saturday morning at 9 right here. For more information, visit speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Tired of the same old presentations?
Can you forward to slide 38, please?
Are you looking for a new, out-of-the-box topic for your next event?
Want your group to leave inspired, informed, and satisfied?
No PowerPoint presentations and dim lights here. No snoring or snoozing goes on during Pat's presentations. To help your entire group, organization, business, or church stay safe during any healthcare or hospital experience, invite Pat to speak. Pick a topic from her website or request your own. Visit her website, speakupandstayalive.com, or call Pat to discuss how she can make your next event fun, enlightening, and life-saving.
Want testimonials?
Go to the bulletin board link at the website for color pictures and comments from real people. Again, it's speakupandstayalive.com or call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462.
This is Pat Rulo, Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. We just did a presentation to a lovely group of folks, and I've got a beautiful woman sitting here who wants to speak with us today. And what is your name?
Olga.
Let me ask you a question. After today's presentation, what did you learn that you might be able to use the next time you go into a hospital or doctor's office to stay safe?
Make sure the people attending me wash their hands. That's so important.
That's very important. And will you feel able to ask, would you please wash your hands?
I think now I will. I've learned many things from your presentation.
We've got another lovely lady who has to speak.
My name is Denise. I'm the activities director. I just thought it was really interesting on the cross-contamination, the lab coats, just how many germs are on the lab coats, how doctors may not wash them, their neckties, just your clothing, how that can all carry germs, just things I never thought of that I was made aware of today.
And I appreciate being here and making you aware of that. Thank you.
We're very happy you came. We're very happy you came.
Anybody else that would like to speak with us? Anybody else? One of you guys.
Oh, I'll talk.
Yes, of course she'll talk. And what is your name?
My name's Kelly.
And you work here?
I do. I work in the activities department.
And you guys do a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. I just learned the importance of really being an advocate for your loved ones and also for yourself and just not being afraid. A lot of times we're so intimidated by the people that are taking care of us that we're afraid to question them, feeling that it might offend them. But really, I'm sure they want to make sure that they're doing the best job too. And sometimes, like you had said, it's just because maybe they're overworked or busy. And so I'm sure they appreciate the fact that we're just trying to keep ourselves safe, which would keep them safe in turn. So just really about being able to, like your presentation, the title, Speak Up and Stay Alive. It's the perfect title for your presentation. It's really good.
I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. So happy to spend this hour with you to help you survive any healthcare or hospital encounter. Even though last week was our formal birthday, or as we call it, radioversary, we're still celebrating. So today we're going to play the birthday edition of our three most requested games, America's favorite radio games, just by the way. Fear the Wheelchair, Squeak Up and Stay Alive, and Shocking News from Around the World. We are going to play a speed round, a lightning round of these three games. And we're even equipped with birthday noisemakers, horns, and squeakers. All right, let's enter the game chamber and start with our first game, Fear the Wheelchair, always so well announced by Joe.
Fear the Wheelchair.
Excellent job. Thank you, Joe. All right, this game came about because I do fear the wheelchairs in a hospital. Think of how seldom they are cleaned and how much bacteria can live on them. So Fear the Wheelchair is a representation of all hospital hazards. Listen, as Joe reads some right or wrong statements, and then even though I can't hear you, shout out your answer along with Bob. Is the statement right? Or is it wrong? All right, and for the birthday lightning round, let's put 60 seconds on the clock and see how many Bob can get right. Ready, Joe?
Ready. Right or wrong, the germiest object in the patient's room is the doorknob.
What do you think, Bob?
That's wrong. Nope.
Yay. What is it, Bob?
Oh, it's got to be the TV changer.
Yes.
Right or wrong, hand sanitizer does not kill the C. diff bacterium.
That is right.
That is right. Good job, Bob.
All right, right or wrong, bacteria can live on fabric for 90 days or longer.
What do you think, Bobby?
Oh, that's definitely right.
Yes, that is right. Cross-contamination.
Right or wrong, most store-bought chicken is fed wholesome whole grains.
Oh, what do you think, Bob?
That's wrong.
You're right. That is wrong. They're fed antibiotics, right, Joe?
Yes.
Sure.
Some have no legs, right?
Some have no legs?
Isn't that what they said? Was it? Because they're so big, they don't have legs.
No, they're so big they can't walk.
Is this a chicken joke?
I don't know.
Is that a chicken joke? Any more?
Yeah.
A couple more seconds on
the clock. I'm sorry. Right or wrong, genetically modified foods must be marked as such.
What do you think, Bobby?
You definitely have to have them marked, and they have to be labeled that way.
But they're not, Bob.
I know.
Oh, Bob. Any more, Joe?
Yes, final one. Right or wrong, Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio is a powerful resource for all your healthcare-related safety needs.
I think that's right.
Yay, it is right. Yes, well, thank you, guys. That was a great game. We did that in 60 seconds or less. And now, let's move on to the next game.
Shocking news from around the world.
The birthday edition, no less. All right, but I'm going to read some news, and you guys will decide if it is a shock or a crock. Meaning, is it true? That would be a shock. Or is it false? And that would be a crock. So is the statement a shock?
Oh.
How about wow?
Oh.
Wow.
Joe is a shock. Or is it a crock?
Oh.
There you go. All right, let me pull some news from the game chamber. All right, guys. Researchers in the UK said that leather handbags in particular pose the most significant health hazard because their spongy material is an ideal environment for most bacteria. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
I'm saying that's a shock.
What do you think, Joe?
It's a crock.
Bobby's right. It's a shock. Remember we talked...
Is that right?
How about wow?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow,
that is a shock. It is true. Think about all the dirty purse bottoms. Joe doesn't want to think about that, no. Do you? All right, anyway, folks, clean the bottom of your purse and don't put them on your kitchen counters. Remember, Chuck Gerba talked about that, Bobby?
Yes, he did. He said they were very, very dirty.
Okay.
Extremely dirty.
Yes. All right, guys, shocking news number two. Men with high testosterone are more likely to wear blue in competitions. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
I'm going to say that's a crock.
What do you think, Joe?
It's a crock.
It is
right
a crock. You guys are right.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh.
What do you think the color really is?
Red.
Red, yeah.
It is red, mm-hmm. Yeah. Why do so many sports players and athletes choose to wear the color red when they compete? A new study to be published in Psychological Science suggests that it may have to do with their testosterone levels. The last shocking news from around the world. Lipsticks and lip glosses are made of natural ingredients and are safe to eat. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
No, that's a crock.
That's definitely a crock.
That is absolutely a crock. You're right. A study conducted by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration showed that more than 400 popular lipstick brands contained twice as much lead as previously thought, as well as cadmium, chromium, aluminum, and five other toxic metals. Well, we could play this one all day because there's so much bizarre healthcare news, it's hard to keep up. Thank you guys for playing everyone's favorite game.
Shocking news from around the world.
You got it. All right, speaking of squeaks, let's switch to the always popular Squeak Up. And stay alive. This game came about one day when I innocently suggested that the squeaky wheel gets the grease and that if you have a question of your doctor or nurse, get squeaky. Ask questions. So I will read a question from the birthday game chamber and you guys will squeak your squeakers when you think you have the answer. So let's try for another 60 seconds on the clock, shall we? Yeah.
I'm waiting on
you. Are
you
guys sleeping or what? The heck? It's a birthday party. Woo, I'm not taking you guys anywhere. Here we go, the Squeak Up and Stay Alive question number one of the birthday edition. One of the easiest ways to prevent an infection in the hospital is to ask everyone to Joe.
Wash their hands.
Yes, Joe.
Yes, Joe. Yay. That's good, Joe.
All right, the Squeak Up and Stay Alive question number two of the birthday edition. One of the easiest ways to prevent an infection. I just said that. Sorry. Bed sores are caused by three things. Name one. Bobby.
Shear.
Shear, yes. Do you guys know what the other two are?
I don't even know what shear is.
It's shear, like if somebody's on, laying on a bed and then they start sliding down the sheets and the sheets are pulling in one direction and they're sinking in the other direction, it shears the skin against the sheets.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's shear. The other is friction, you know, like they jam a bedpan under a wet
bottom.
That's friction. It could tear the skin. And then pressure, because sometimes a bed sore is called a pressure sore.
That's because you lay there so long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
All right, guys. That was good. The Squeak Up and Stay Alive. Question number three of the birthday edition. The statistic is every patient is subjected to at least how many medications errors per day? Is it none, one, or 13? Oh, that's Joe Squeaker. What's the answer?
Two.
It's not on the list, Joe.
Oh. We said, 13.
No. We'd all be dead if we were all...
Hey, Joe, I tried to give you the answer. It's one.
Yeah. One in every patient is subjected to at least one medication error per day. 13 would be horrible.
They'd be dead.
Absolutely. All right. This is a lightning round. I think we're taking too much time. Squeak Up and Stay Alive. Question number four of the birthday edition. The most dangerous time of year to be in a hospital is... Bobby.
It's going to be summertime.
Yep. The July effect. Remember that? Remember why?
Yeah, because everybody's going on vacation. Nobody's there.
Exactly. The July effect. All right, Squeak Up and Stay Alive. Question again of the birthday edition. Lay this on your hospital tray table so everyone knows you are informed and an empowered patient. Joe.
Your book.
Yes. All right. Copy of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, the Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide. You guys are awesome. You're fun. You're great and very speedy. I love you guys. All right. Always a fun and a fast way to share very serious information. Well, thank you guys for playing the Radioversary Lightning Round edition of our three favorite games, Shocking News from Around the World, Squeak Up and Stay Alive, and...
Fear the Wheelchair.
Happy Radioversary to us.
You got it. That's great. Happy birthday.
Don't go anywhere. There's so much more you can learn about healthcare and hospital safety on America's favorite radio show, Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio.
Jerry the Gerb with a Speak Up and Stay Alive healthcare safety snippet just for you. Here's our expert, Pat Rulo.
Hey, Jerry, did you know that people are talking dirty and don't even know it? Think of cell phones and office telephones. Thanks to you, they're covered with thousands of Jerrys just like you. Thousands of people each year miss time from work thanks to all of this dirty talk. Sanitize your phone daily with a disposable disinfecting wipe and clean your hands every so often with soap and water if possible. Talking dirty isn't nice and it's not healthy. And oh, Jerry, now what are you doing on the bottom of that lady's purse?
Listen to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. For more information, go to speakupandstayalive.com.
You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio every Saturday morning in Cleveland, Ohio. I am Pat Rulo, your hostess and author of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, the Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, available at all of our live speaking events or at our website, speakupandstayalive.com. And if you do not have access to the internet and want a copy of the book, you can call me and I will get it out to you right away. Lots of folks get the book this way. So here is my phone number, 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. And If you're one of the few left around town who do not own a copy of the book, today is the day to get it. You never know when a hospital stay will pop up. You need to be prepared ahead of time. Or get a copy or two and give one to a friend. What a great life-saving gift. I encourage everyone to own this important book, not because I wrote it, but because you need it. Now, if you missed some of today's show, you were silly. When you join us each week, you may be adding years to your life or to the life of someone you know and love. So set your alarm clocks for Saturday mornings and tune in. And tell your friends, they deserve to be safe too. And if you want to hear the show again, or if you want to play it for a friend in need, simply go to the radio link at the speakupandstayalive.com website to listen to today's program. And be sure to listen next week. I have quite an interesting guest. You do not want to miss this. And of course, the boys will be here to play whatever game they want to play. Always a fun way to share important healthcare and hospital survival tips and tools with you. So when does all of this good stuff happen? That's next Saturday morning, where you can find us in Cleveland, Ohio, from 9 to 10 Eastern on AM 1220 WHKW. Or listen live via the internet. Check the speakupandstayalive.com website to find out how. In the meantime, I hope you have a happy and a healthy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
The information provided in today's broadcast is for informational purposes only and was not intended for use as diagnosis or treatment of a health problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional.
Hi, I'm Pat Rulo, hostess of Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, heard right here every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. Give the gift of summer with a discounted season pass to Pioneer Waterland and Dry Fun Park in Chardon, Ohio. And that includes free parking for the entire season. Family pass for $4, $195. Order your season passes today at pioneerwaterland.com or by phone 440-285-5200. That's 440-285-5200.